Welcome aboard another voyage of the Full Sail Podcast. I am your host, Brandon Tomioi, once again joined by David Deep.
Hey, what's going on?
A lot of stuff happening in Clipperland lately.
Yes, sir. It's just like all of a sudden, you know, they decided that late August, early September was time to start making all these moves.
Well, we're getting closer and closer to training camp, so let's start talking about it. But first, we've got a word from our sponsor. Oh no! Are you tired of that thin front court? Watching in agony as your head coach has to rush a starter back into the game? Introducing the new Clippers front court, the answer to all your previous LAC front court concerns. It stretches, clogs, posts, and even stuffs for a versatile bench that can swap offensive and defensive options in seconds. The secret is the use of a revolutionary ingredient called depth that allows the coach to choose from a variety of substitutions. It's that easy. Last season's rotation was thin and lacking, but the new front court, Doc just picks based on the matchup and substitutes. What a difference. Foul trouble can be an issue with a thin front court. Ouch, that's number six. Not with this new front court rotation. Now Blake can sub out and a suitable replacement comes in all at the same time. And it's not just for Blake and DJ. New front court is handy for having five shooters on the floor. Or use DJ with Udo and enjoy a block party every night. You can even sit both front court starters at the same time. Amazing. Stop having to wonder if Big Baby will fail to rebound on another defensive possession. Stop dreading the start of the second quarter. And look at that lead go to waste. Get the new front court rotation and watch the game with less frustration. Order your brand new all-in-one Clippers front court for just 5 easy payments of $950,000 through the stretch provision. This is a limited time offer, but wait, there's more. Here's Dave to tell you more about the new Clippers front court now.
I gotta say, that was the greatest infomercial I've ever heard in my life. Oh my god. Oh, how do I follow that? Oh, man. Well, Doc Rivers knew at the end of the season that the glaring weakness was in the front court. You had Blake, you had DeAndre, and there was a huge drop-off after that. They needed help, and the first domino was Spencer Hawes. I thought that was a great pickup, and he actually signed for less than market value because he could have gotten $8 million a year from Phoenix or Portland. And then this week, Epi Udo, his name was mentioned and people were saying that he was on the, you know, that he was going to sign, but I also heard rumblings that he had an offer overseas that was more lucrative. So for him to choose the Clippers was pretty nice. You add him with Hawes and then Big Baby. You can go a second unit with Hawes and Udo if you wanted to. Hawes for the stretch, as a stretch four or stretch five, and then Udo as the interior defender. Or you can go with Big Baby and Udo. So there's many different options. I think this is probably the best front court that the Clippers have had in the Chris Paul era. So I'm really excited to see how they mesh together.
I mean, there's a lot of versatility, and it just seems that with the pieces that they have now, that there is a lot of complementary support. If you go strictly to the bench and go with Udo and Hawes, like you just said, you've got the rebounder in Hawes. And then you've got the defensive guy in Udo, so you can really match up. And you're going to want Hawes standing at the line, at the three-point line, and Udo in the paint anyways. I'm pretty excited about this. And on top of that, I don't think we've seen Udo actually play a no-middle defense the way Doc runs a no-middle defense. That is something really exciting, because with his length and his ability to clog the paint, and then you combine that with DJ, that is going to be a complete difference from what we saw last year in terms of the ability to protect the paint. DJ, he can't do everything himself.
There was a chart that had the best rim protectors in the league, and I believe DJ was first in blocks attempted, because with the perimeter defense not there, like, so many guys were going into the lane and, you know, taking to the hole. And so he had to basically recover for a lot of his teammates. And now with Udo in the mix, that gives him another interior defender, a great pick-and-roll defender, that can clog the lane, and that gives him another weapon right there, that where he can cover up people's mistakes.
The one thing I keep thinking, though, is, I mean, as much as I'm really excited to see Udo play defensively, I feel that there could be a lot of frustration when he misses easy shots. And if you look at his his shot charts over the past few seasons, his finish rate at the rim is actually quite low. It's under 50%. It's probably around 46% for his career, which is really not impressive, because when you're just right at the rim, you should be at least making half of those shots.
I think if he can get on the court with Chris Paul, that's the automatic Chris Paul spike that you might see. You know, but then again, we're not really expecting him for offense at all. I mean, that's just icing on the cake. He's just supposed to come in there and defend. And I think you could also play him with Blake, because Blake he can stretch it out. And you know, he's so versatile offensively that having Udo in there, you know, and if DJ gets in foul trouble and stuff, I think that could be a good combination too.
It filled most of their glaring needs other than a wing defender. And with getting defensive help on the wing, along with Udo, they were able to sign Chris Douglas Roberts, who had a comeback season with Charlotte last year and was really important part of their bench.
Yeah, I'm pretty bullish on the signing, because I think CDR gives the Clipper another wing guy who's plays similar to Barnes, except he's younger, a little more athletic, better off the dribble, can create his own shot better. One thing that he really improved at was his three-point shooting. Last year, he shot nearly 39%. But, you know, I've been watching some videos of him from last season and then from a few seasons ago when he played with the Nets. And the shot looks better, looks clean. And I think he'll help a lot. And I think there's a possibility he could fight Barnes for that starting position. If Doc really does believe in him, and if he comes out and does well in preseason and stuff, I think you might see a small forward controversy for the small forward position. So, I think it's a good signing. We'll see if they need more depth at that spot. But if Douglas Roberts can actually come in and have a career year, or at least duplicate what he did last season, then I think we'll be okay at the three spot.
I believe his numbers per 36 last year were somewhere along the lines of 12 points a game and about 4 to 5 rebounds a game. That's definitely something that Barnes was providing to the team when he was playing his best basketball with the team last season. Slightly better in that January stretch when he was just completely on fire. But I would say through the second half of last season, that's about the numbers that he would provide. So you get that from a guy that shoots better threes. And of course, like you said before, with Udo, you get the Chris Paul bump.
Right, yeah. And you gotta take into account that the per 36 you're talking about, that's over the stretch of a whole season with CDR. And obviously, if you took his second half numbers and inflated that to per 36, it would probably be more than that. It'd probably be, you know, 15 points or something like that, and, you know, 5 rebounds or so. Because that was when he was playing his best ball, was in March and April.
The one interesting thing about getting these two guys, though, and the thing that's been probably the longest thread of discussion, is the use of the stretch provision. Because not a lot of teams use the stretch provision.
Aren't the Clippers the first team to have used it in a long time?
First in a long, long time.
Yeah.
I know that the Lakers had the option to stretch Steve Nash, and they'd rather take the hit this season. And after the Clippers did it, Jamal Franklin was stretched by the Grizzlies, which we can get into later. Other than those two teams, the Clippers and the Grizzlies, I don't recall when the last stretch provision use was in the NBA. Though, if anybody's listening, feel free to tweet at us at Full Sail Podcast and let us know. The thing about the stretch provision, it gives me a sense that despite the deficiencies that they had, and even giving up that first round pick, that Ballmer's not afraid to actually spend the money. Now, that's a cap hold of, like we said earlier in that infomercial, $950,000 each year for 5 years.
Right.
That's about one vet min contract a season. Early signs show that at least it would appear that way, that he at least wants to come in and he wants to not shake things up, but he wants to show the sincerity that he does want this team to win off the bat. He wants them to improve from where they were last season, and fill those needs and do what it takes to fill those needs.
Right, as you can see by the contract extension that he gave Doc Rivers. I mean, $50 million. That's not a small amount of money. I think with Ballmer, just to see something like that off the bat is a very positive thing, knowing that he's willing to do that. And, you know, next summer we'll see if he's willing to go further, like, for instance, buying a first-round pick, even a second-round pick, I mean, those, that'll cost you at least, you know, from $1 to $3 million right there, which Sterling never did. But if Ballmer is serious, then, you know, I think he'd be willing to do that. I think the one thing he's trying to do is make a splash by giving Doc the reins and, you know, trusting him. Because, you know, like Ballmer said in you know, a couple of interviews, that he's a first-time owner of a sports team, so he doesn't know the ins and outs of how to run a basketball team, which is something he has to learn. But he has a great leader in Doc that, you know, has experience. And even though he's never been a GM, you know, he's trusting in Doc to make these moves, because I don't think Ballmer's very, you know, as well-versed yet on how the cap works and, you know, stretch provisions and giving up picks and things like that. I don't think he'll learn over time. I was a little bit concerned that he gave up that first rounder to basically get rid of Dudley. I didn't think it was necessary to give up an asset like that, because, you know, in this new CBA, the first rounders are a pretty valuable commodity. You know, I get why he did it. You know, if I get that he had to make a splash and he had to prove that he wanted to win. And Doc also, because Doc needed to fill out the roster. So, you know, you combine all those things together and, you know, I get why it happened. I think also because he feels, this is just me, but I think maybe because since he's so loaded, he's so rich, that he feels he could just buy first rounders, you know, every year. And what's the big deal about trading a first rounder when you can just buy one, you know, come draft time or something? So I'm thinking that might be another possibility. So I don't know, but I think time will tell. It's kind of too early to see right now.
It's definitely early. The thing with buying the picks is that's something that I would love to see him do as well. And that's not something that I believe we've ever seen the Clippers done in history. And I guess the next thing really is, does it come down to whether or not they'll be able to buy the picks based on people, like basically, will people make them available? I'm starting to get of the opinion that we're reaching an apex of overvaluing draft picks, because we love the potential. We love how cheap these contracts are. We love that you have young talent that you can develop on your roster for about 3 to 5 seasons. And that's not counting in a possible extension. That's at the rookie scale.
Right.
So that's definitely something that I believe every team wants, because they're like, hey, look, it's young talent, it's talent you can develop, there's upside here, and it's cheap. So you see that, but at the same time, I almost feel like there's so much thought and consideration into what a value it is that some people are afraid to give it up, even if it means you get better now. And if your window is small, and let's look at the Clippers' window, is their time to strike is right now. It's between now and 2017, because that's about how long those contracts are for Blake and CP3. This is their time to pounce. So I'm not a fan of giving up picks normally. And even then, like you said, I kind of groaned a bit having to see that they had to give up a pick just to get this done. But I get it. You know, I get it. And you look at other teams, for instance, Golden State. Did Golden State not get immediately better by getting Iguodala, by trading away their 2014 and 2017? It was something that they did. It was a big splash. And yes, they give up talent, especially talent in the 2014 draft, which is one of the most vaunted drafts. And I believe who'd they get out of it? Rodney Hood? And Rodney Hood looked good in the summer league. At the same time, sure, okay, they give up this pick, but Golden State is now looked at as a top team, one of those teams that people look at and say, hey, they could be the dark horse. They are a team, maybe with one more piece, where they could really turn some heads. And they were that close with the Kevin Love trade, which, of course, we know did not happen.
Great.
But, again, I think if you go back and you ask them, do they trade the 2014 and 2017 to get Iguodala and start building their team into a contender, they're going to do that 10 out of 10 times.
Yeah, and that makes sense. I mean, to give two firsts for a player of Iguodala's caliber, especially at the time when I think wasn't he coming off of an All-Star season, you know, it made sense. I think the problem what people had with this deal was it was basically to dump Dudley and to get nothing back in return other than two guys who they ended up waiving. I think that's what people were kind of upset about. And I think they thought, like, hey, if you're going to give a first-round pick, they wanted more value in return. But also, I think, you know, Doc didn't want to give that first-rounder. I mean, I think he was all summer, you know, he was holding on to it. And he wasn't willing to trade it except if it was for somebody that was worth it, you know. And he tried really hard to get guys like Paul Pierce and you know, Ariza, Luol Deng, all these guys that he was interested in, you know. And I think that if he had to give a first-round pick for one of those guys, he would have. And I don't think people would have complained then. But because of, you know, you're taking into account the guys that he received and the package that was that first-round pick was part of, I think that was the issue that people had with it.
It's interesting, too, with the way this offseason is and just the available free agents at the small forward position, because you look at the people that were available, a lot of them are either on the old side or they're just not very good. And this was one of the thinnest small forward classes that I can believe in a while. And you look at the money that some of the people got. Mm, for instance, right. The money that Luol Deng got. And I am a fan of Luol Deng.
Yeah, I mean, what was it, 2 years, $20 million, something like that?
Yeah, he got 2 years, $20 million. And I guess you could say the general opinion on that two years, $20 million is that Miami overpaid. Whereas if you're getting a one-year flyer on a guy that had a pretty nice bounce-back season in Chris Douglas Roberts, and it's for vet min, it's not as flashy a signing, but
right.
The risk level is so much lower.
Exactly. Yeah, and I think it's also because of the unknown. Like, a lot of people don't know who CDR is, but you know, if you ask any Hornets fans, I mean, you know, I was on a couple of Hornets forums, and they were raving about him. They really wanted to bring him back, and they thought that he outplayed all the other wings towards the end of the season. And that's why he won the starting job over, like, Gerald Henderson and MKG and stuff. And they felt that he was worth, you know, a multi-year deal more than just the veteran minimum. So I think for the Clippers to get him for that price, I think it's a steal.
For that price, if he pans out, he's going to look like one of the biggest bargains next year in the NBA, very much like when they signed Barnes 2 years ago, and that turned out so well for them at that time.
Right. Yeah, and that's how he ended up getting a lucrative contract, a three-year, $11 million deal.
Exactly. The LAC depth chart now is looking pretty set. The one guy that technically would take them up to 15 right now looks like DeAndre Liggins, who was invited to their training camp roster on an unguaranteed contract. He did play for the Clippers during Summer League and was on their Summer League team. And when I was watching him play at Summer League, I really thought that he was the Clippers' best player, and he did a little bit of everything. So you can almost think of him as a budget Turkoglu, a younger budget Turkoglu in a way. I mean, he passed, he rebounded, he scored a little bit. Turkoglu's definitely a much better shooter than Liggins by a long shot. But at the same time, too, you look at that team, the Summer League team for the Clippers, and that was not a very good team. So maybe it's one of those things where having Liggins on the team, he just outclassed everyone, and it didn't mean that he was remarkably better as a prospect, but he was just that much better than the rest of the team.
Right. Yeah, and, you know, it's just a training camp invite, and I'm assuming they're going to invite a few more guys, and he's just going to have to fight it out for the final spot. But in the end, I don't think he'll make it. I think it's just, you know, training camp fodder, and you know, there's nothing more than that. If he does make it, then you know, all the more power to him. But I think his chances are slim.
There was some discussion on Twitter, of course, among the fans, that someone that the Clippers could have looked at, though, was Jamal Franklin, who we mentioned before was stretched by the Grizzlies. Now, he's technically a shooting guard, and they have so much depth at the wing as it is, though, of course, Liggins is also a wing in that way. But the thing about that, too, is he's not that proven as a shooter, and I think the allure is that he's lengthy, he's got wingspan, he's basically got all the athletic qualities that make him a blogger's fantasy in a lot of ways.
Right.
It didn't happen, maybe because Doc was thinking more along the line of someone that can do more, has more versatility, and of course he loves versatility. He loves shooting. We've known that. We've talked about that before. We talked about it today. Do you think that was a bad decision, that they definitely should have at least picked up Franklin on waivers, that should have been the 15th man on the roster?
No, I mean, I think Franklin deserves a training camp invite, but I don't think at this point I would have spent the 15th spot on him. Probably rather just leave that open in case of injury or in case somebody becomes available later on. But you are right. He is the blogger's fantasy. Just ask the Clipper blog guys.
Shout out to our friends over at Clipper blog. It's one of those things, too, where, you know, there's a high percentage chance that he is going to get cut from the team, and he might not end up with the team past training camp. But, of course, anything extra you get from him, hey, it's a bonus. Otherwise, though, it looks like the roster is indeed set. You do think, though, that CDR could outplay Barnes for that starting role. And we talked about it a little before. Is it also that Barnes, at least maybe it's our memory of Barnes 2 years ago, that when he was playing alongside Jamal, when they had A Tribe Called Bench, that he played so well alongside Jamal. I mean, yeah, Bledsoe was there too, and that was a big part of it, but is it something where the pairing, when healthy, looks like it's just that much better and you'd rather have that chemistry there?
Yeah, I think the Tribe Called Bench thing was fascinating because of the makeup of that bench. You had Bledsoe, Jamal, Barnes, Lamar, and Turioff. And I think that five-man unit, they worked really well. I mean, Lamar was able to handle and distribute. You know, Bledsoe with a spectacular defense, and Barnes, he fit, like, that was a really run and gun second unit, and he fit that unit really well. And I think he can do it again. You know, if he comes off the bench, I mean, you got Farmar, Jamal, Barnes, Haas, and Udo, if they ever run that five-man unit, I think he can flourish with that unit. Barnes can still play, and he's still a decent player, and if he gets hot, he gets really hot. And he's always been an above-average rebounder for a wing, so he has his strengths, you know. But I think if CDR does play to his potential, I think he might be the better candidate in the starting lineup. And then, you know, Barnes will still get his minutes, and I think he'll still contribute with the second unit.
And the reliance on Barnes needing to hit the corner three or that wing three, that's not as big a deal anymore now that Farmar's along, because Farmar can definitely shoot the three, and that allows Barnes to be more of a slasher. So I can see the reasoning for that.
Right.
Also, with CDR, if that 39% from deep is not a fluke, having him and JJ in a floppy set, that is more tantalizing, at least on paper, than having Barnes with that team. So I can see where you're coming from on that too.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I mean, if you can hit 40% with JJ on those floppies, then that's perfect. Yeah, and like you were saying, the second unit with Farmar, that's the thing. Carlson was actually decent. I think he shot like, what, 37% from three? Farmar shot 44%. I mean, he's a killer three-point shooter, so that's an added...
He's clearly the better three-point shooter, yeah.
Clearly. So that's an added element for the Clippers that they didn't have last season.
So you're saying then, depth chart, little friendly wager, that the roster is CP3, Redick, CDR, Blake, and DJ?
Yep, first unit. And second unit, I got Udo, Barnes, Haas, Jamal, and Farmar.
That looks solid to me.
That's a nice rotation, man. I love it.
Maybe even with that, we see they don't mix starters with the bench, at least in the early season, and we have something kind of like a Tribe Called Bench 2.0. Who knows?
Yeah, they'll probably start out with, you know, usually when they start out, it's always at least 10, 11 guys in the rotation before they shorten it later on in the season.
All right, Dave. It was nice having you on the show again and talking Clippers as always.
Yeah, thanks for having me, dude.
Thanks for cruising along with me. For everyone else, for David Deep and myself, Brandon Tomioi. Again, this is the third episode of the Full Sail Podcast. Thank you for sailing with us again.